Tonight, we're in Ezekiel. We're looking at these chapters 37, 38 through 39. Chapter 37 is the dry bones, and it's the restoration of Israel. I think it's something that they've been talking about since all the way through the prophets, that Israel is going to be restored in the end times at the end. It's never happened before. As we read through these, I've got many questions about this, different opinions, especially in chapter 38 and 39. You're going to have Gog, the battle of Gog and Magog. A battle that has never taken place. There's like eight different views on how to interpret that. And as I read that, I almost want to switch my opinion on it where it's been before as you read through it, especially when you see this sequence. Chapter 40, it talks about the temple. Ezekiel's going to measure the temple. That has been, then this is not Solomon's temple or Herod's temple or the tribulation temple. This is the temple that is going to house the presence of the Lord when he returns. And that describes that for chapter 40, 41, 42. Chapter 43, the glory returns. This is the Lord coming into his temple, coming off from the Mount of Olives. And then chapter 44 through 48 describes the land and the city and the lifestyle of that kingdom age, chapter 44 through 48. Including in chapter 47, a river that forms or begins the source in the temple and flows out into the city, connecting the Mediterranean Sea to the Dead Sea so that water runs all the way through and out the bottom of the Dead Sea to the Gulf of Aqaba. So in a sense, Jerusalem becomes a seaport city with this major river that comes out of there. So you're reading now. As you go through this, again, you want to approach this with an open mind. And, you know, one of the ways of looking at it is it's all symbolic. It's all representing some other truth, you know, that someday it's all going to work out. We all go to heaven or whatever. Or else you can see this as, you know, actual history that hasn't happened yet. And I tend to see this as, you know, especially when you get to the dry bones, the restoration of Israel, that that is something that's going to take place yet in the future. This restoration, these dry bones that we're going to read about are not, well, it could be, but I don't think it's something that has happened yet, you know, because Israel's back in the land. Maybe that's what they're talking about. That could be. It's a sign that things are still happening. But it appears to be something yet in the future of a restoration. And as we read through this, keep that in mind. When we get to chapter 38 and 39, I'll give you some ideas on when this could take place. You may have an idea of when this battle takes place. I don't think it's ever taken place historically, what we see in chapter 38 and 39. And then you can see the sequence, the restoration of Israel, a major battle against Israel, who's been restored, then the actual temple that is being that is going to be rebuilt, not for the tribulation, but the actual restoration of the temple that will be filled with the presence of the Lord, and then the land that in a reestablished with Jesus as the king. And again, the Ezekiel doesn't talk about Jesus as the king, it's talking about the king, you know, the Messiah, which that's who Jesus is. But again, we don't know that yet in these verses. And just continues. And the name of the city, the end of the book, if you want to see the end of the book, go to chapter 48, the last thing. The last thing in this book, just like remember how Isaiah ended with, you know, and they'll go out and look at the dead bodies. Ezekiel 48, the very last verse, verse 35, the distance all around will be 18,000 cubits, talking about the city and the gates and all. And the name of the city from that time on will be the Lord is there. And again, Lord is capitalized all four letters, which means that's the Hebrew word Yahweh, which means Yahweh is there. The name of this city will be Yahweh is there, which again means the Messiah is now not in heaven overseeing humanity, but has now moved in and living in the city. Not like in the tabernacle or in the Ark of the Covenant, but the Lord Yahweh is living in Jerusalem, just like he said all along. So again, with that in mind, you can kind of see a sequence of this, and I think we should keep that in mind. But anyway, here we go. Let's start in chapter 37. Again, there's a crazy amount of information here. I can't do it justice tonight, but I do want to point it out as we add to our repertoire of eschatological verses beginning in Genesis, going all the way through. This is still building on it and bringing a lot of details. Jesus in his parables, Jesus in his teaching, in his references, his own eschatological teaching built on a lot of these things. Here it is, chapter 37. The hand of the Lord was upon me, Ezekiel says, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me in the middle of a valley. So right here, he says, brings me out, Spirit of the Lord. Now, I mean, this is safely to say this is now some kind of a vision that's not necessarily historically going to take place, but is symbolic. I mean, I think we're safe to say that. Different than some of these other verses where you're going to have, you know, years and historical locations. It was a valley. It was full of bones. He led me back and forth among them, and I saw a great many bones on the floor of the valley, bones that were very dry, again, indicating very old. They'd been there for a long time. And he asked, Son of man, can these bones live? I said, O sovereign Lord, or sovereign Yahweh, you alone know. Then he said to me, prophesy to these bones and say to them. Now, in other words, he's given Ezekiel the words that he wants spoken in this situation. And so the very words he's given Ezekiel are prophetic words that Ezekiel's now going to speak forth and write down. In other words, it's the word of the Lord that's going to be spoken through the prophet. Say to them, dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath enter you, and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you and make flesh come upon you and cover you with skin. I will put breath in you, and you will come to life. Then you'll know that I am the Lord. So he's talking to these bones, and there's going to be knowledge. There's going to be understanding. There's going to be a life come back into them. And because of that, they're going to know that he is Yahweh. So I prophesied as I was commanded, and as I was prophesying, there was a noise, a rattling sound, and the bones came together, a bone to bone. I looked, and tendons and flesh appeared on them, and skin covered them, and there was no breath in them. But there was no breath in them. So the flesh has come together. Now, as you look at this, this, you know, is almost symbolic of a resurrection. It's talking about Israel's restoration. Again, this is something that I don't think has happened yet, historically. Then he said to me, prophesy to the breath. Prophesy, son of man, and say to it, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Come from the four winds, O breath, and breathe into these slain. So they're slain. They've been killed in battle. That they may live. So I prophesied as he commanded me, and breathed, and breath entered them, and they came to life and stood up on their feet, a vast army. Then he said to me, son of man, these bones are the... Now this is nice. Now it's like, what is going on? Well, here's the interpretation. Son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. Key phrase, whole house of Israel. Not Judah, not northern Israel, but all 12 tribes. They say, our bones are dried up and our hope is gone. We are cut off. Therefore prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. O my people, I am going to open your graves and bring you up from them. I will bring you back to the land of Israel. Then you, my people, will know that I am the Lord. When I open your graves and bring you up from them and put my spirit in you, and you will live, and I will settle you in your own land, then you'll know that I, the Lord, have spoken, and I have done it, declares the Lord. So there is pretty clear, the nation of Israel is going to be brought back. They're going to be put in their land. It mentions the spirit that's going to be placed in them, which kind of gives the idea of, like Joel talked about, the spirit of the Lord will be poured out on all flesh. So not just breath, but his spirit is in them. Talking about sometime after the resurrection in the beginning of the church age, or when the spirit comes on Israel at their restoration. So when that takes place, you could say opportunities or options. Bad ideas would be Babylon, coming back from Babylon in captivity. That doesn't fit, because all Israel is restored. And we've already eliminated that as the restoration of Israel, that they're promised that they'd return from captivity, but they've been sent out again. It could be, a lot of people like the year 1948, when Israel started coming back as a nation. I don't think that's it, and that may be an indication that, you know, history's moving towards this, but I don't think that's the case. It could be at the beginning of the tribulation, but that's kind of rough when they sign a treaty with the Antichrist and God begins to work with them. It could be at this time of the sign of the Son of Man when he appears and he seals the 144,000 during the tribulation. That could be the time period. As you read on through this, it seems like it's the final restoration at the end of the 70th week when Israel's being brought back. We talked about the highway is open coming from the north, coming from Egypt, and all of Israel's being gathered together from all the nations. They're being brought back. That seems to be the time I would go with, is at the end of the 70th week. they're all being brought back into the land of Israel after the sign of the Son of Man has appeared. They realize who the Messiah is, and he brings them back. Again, not all these things, you kind of put the pieces on the table, but how it all actually fits together, we're not sure. Now but it is a nation of Israel coming back alive. And notice some absolutes. Their flesh is being brought back. It's not in a spiritual context. They are talking about the land. Whenever they talk about the land, it's the land of Israel. It's not the land of heaven represented by the land of Israel. It is the land of Israel. These seem to be absolute, solid things. And so for people today in the church to start, saying, well, the church is fulfilling all of this spiritually, or we're going to go to heaven, it really doesn't do justice to, what we've got here, some 10 chapters here in Ezekiel, and supported in other prophets of the actual fulfillment taking place, plus the covenant with Abram, and that I'll give you this land. Nowhere do you get the impression it's symbolic. So nonetheless, we continue. The word of the Lord came to me in verse 15, Son of man, take a stick of wood and write on it, belonging to Judah and the Israelites associated with him, or belonging to Judah. Then take a second stick, another stick, and write on it Ephraim's stick, belonging to Joseph and all the house of Israel associated with him. So basically what you got is a stick that represents the southern nation of Judah and another stick that represents northern Israel called Ephraim. And at this time, Ephraim went into dispersion in 722. Babylon has taken Judah into captivity at this time. So both of these 12 tribes, or these two nations, are dispersed or in captivity. There's nothing there. They consider themselves, unless they've got faith in what Jeremiah the prophet has said and other prophets, Israel's in captivity or dispersed. They've completely given up on any promise of God. You can understand how they could be very skeptical. They could be very secular. It's like, we're done. There's no truth to any of this. But he's supposed to take two sticks. He says, join them together into one stick. In other words, hold them in one hand, it appears, so that they become one in your hand. When your countrymen, and this is what Ezekiel does a lot of this, he does things that are like weird or cause drawing attention, and they'll say to him, when your countrymen ask you, won't you tell us what you mean by this? In other words, what are you doing? What are these two sticks? I mean, he does, not just obnoxious things, but things that are strange, weird. Why are you doing this? Then he gives him a chance to answer the question. Say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. So that's what it's all about. I am going to take the stick of Joseph, which is in Ephraim's hand, and of the Israelite tribes associated with him, and join it to Judah's stick, making them a single stick of wood, and they will become one in my hand. Hold before their eyes the sticks you have written on, and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I will take the Israelites out of the nations where they have gone. I will gather them from all around and bring them back into their own land. I will make them one nation in the land on the mountains of Israel. There will be one king, here it is, one king over all of them, and they'll never again be two nations or be divided into two kingdoms. They will no longer defile themselves with their idols and vile images, or with any other offense. For I will save them from all their sinful backsliding, and I will cleanse them. They will be my people, and I will be their God. That sounds like the complete, full restoration that's taking place at the end of time when Israel's restored for the kingdom. Watch this, verse 24. My servant David will be king over them, and they will all have one shepherd. So then there you got that resurrected David again, serving as their king. Not meaning the Lord is not ruling over David, but David is serving as king in the administration of the Lord at that time. So, I mean, I think if this is literal, that can only take place at that time in history. There may be signs of this or things that make us think of this, look like something like this, but it's not yet fulfilled. They'll follow all my laws and be careful to keep my decrees. Now, you see all their obedience. In all the prophets, Israel is always maybe would try to come back, but they never could. They never had the heart or the ability. Now, all of a sudden, they're there. They're able to do it. They're able to manifest the nature of God. Verse 25, they'll live in the land I gave to my servant Jacob. I mean, how are you going to explain that verse away? They will live in the land I gave my servant Jacob, the land where your fathers lived. Now, what do you mean the land he gave Jacob? The land where all of your ancestors lived. I mean, the land of Israel. So it's kind of absolute there. They and their children and their children's children will live there forever. I mean, forever. And David, my servant, will be their prince forever. So now he's called a king. He's called a prince. Maybe called a shepherd. But again, that prince, he's going to be under the king, Lord Jesus, or the Messiah. And it's going to go forever. I will make a covenant of peace with them. That's interesting, a covenant of peace. What is that covenant of peace? Is that anything to do with the new covenant? Has that got to do with the covenant of peace through the blood of Jesus, the sacrifice of Messiah? With them, I will be an everlasting covenant. Again, that could be speaking of that very thing, the new covenant. I will establish them and increase their numbers, and I will put my sanctuary among them forever. And that's going to take place right here in these verses. With them forever. My dwelling place will be with them. That's how the book ends. The Lord is there. I will be their God, and they will be my people. Then the nations will know that I, the Lord, make Israel holy when my sanctuary is among them forever. And again, that is talking about we are now end of the kingdom age. So I think this dry bone gathering is the gathering of Israel for the final day and then going on into the kingdom. Now comes chapter 38. Now remember, these things do not have to go in chronological order. In fact, many times they don't. They move forward, they go backwards. They're just pieces that are put, you know, together. But this does seem to have a flow to it. So I think we should at least consider that this is when this could take place, this battle of Gog. Now the option, well here, let me just read this right here, the first verse, and then I'll give you some options. The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, set your face against Gog of the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. Prophesy against him and say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I am against you, O Gog, chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. I will turn you around, put hooks in your jaws, and bring you out with your whole army, your horses and your horsemen, fully armed, and a great horde with large and small shields, all of them brandishing their swords. Then it says, Persia and Cush, that is today Iran and Ethiopia, and Put, that's Libya today, will be with them, all their shields and helmets, also Gomer, that's northern, I'll show you where these nations are, with all their troops, and Beth Togarma, which is Armenia today, from the far north with all its troops and the many nations with you. Get ready, be prepared, you and all the hordes gathered around you, and take command of them. Watch verse 8. After many days, you will be called to arms. In future years, you will invade a land that has recovered from war, whose people were gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel, which had long been desolate. They had been brought out from the nations, and now all of them live in safety. You and all your troops and the many nations with you will go up, advancing like a storm. You will be like a cloud covering the land. So this is an invasion from the north of the land of Israel, but it tells you the time of this. It's after the nation of Israel has been gathered from the nations. If it's this gathering, if it's this restoration, you know, again, you can, you know, think differently than what I'm saying here, because I've been putting this together for years, you know, moving the pieces around, trying to arrange it, kind of like trying to write a song. Where does the notes fit? But if this is the final restoration, then this invasion seems to take place after that restoration. They've been moved back into the land and the Lord is set up. This seems like some kind of a battle that they're invading a people that thinks they're in the land to stay. And the Lord is going to have to then destroy Gog in this invasion. Now, some of the times, if we have a timeline here real quick, some of the times for this battle of Gog, we don't need this stuff here right now, is, and I've placed this different times, different places. Put that right. Here's the 1,000-year millennium. Here's, we'll say, the 70th week right here. Again, my 70 years and 1,000 years are not equivalently based. This would be the church age right here. This battle of Gog and Magog, it could be any time in history if you can find a place to put it. It's an invasion from the north. Nebuchadnezzar came from the north. The Persians, well, they didn't invade. They attacked Babylon. But the Greeks, the Seleucids, came from the north. This seems to be something up in, and I'll show you, you've got a map right there. You can see those cities or nations. It could be before the 70th week. It could be this event right here. I've often wanted to put it right here, the Battle of Gog, because that would set the stage for that they're going to be defeated. And if this would be the Antichrist coming from the north, they're defeated by Israel, which would force them to make a treaty with Israel, which just takes place right here. So I like the what we would say pre-trib invasion of Gog, because they're defeated. Then they have to go off somewhere else to make war, which would be the Western world, give Israel the Temple Mound, and the Antichrist, who is defeated here, which would be Gog, makes a treaty with Israel for 7 years. And the number seven comes up in this chapter. Israel's going to use the fuel they gain, or the weapons they gain from this, use it for fuel for 7 years. So that works. But that would mean Israel's going to have received this peace. They're going to be called back to the land before the 70th week begins. And that could fit. I've talked about that before. Others see this taking place, it would be sometime in the middle of the tribulation right here. Like when the Antichrist reveals himself as the abomination of desolation, and then Israel goes off and hides, and that's when that would take place. That doesn't fit so good because Israel now in hiding for the rest of the 70th week. Some would see this at the end right here, and almost this would be the Battle of Armageddon, that all the nations are being gathered together for this invasion. So the Lord is going to be gathering Israel here during this time period. And they're settled in the land, not for very long. I mean, we're just talking a few months, at the most weeks maybe. And then a huge Armageddon battle, or the Battle of Gog, takes place, and they're completely eliminated. Sometimes if you almost see the tribulation as having been ended, the restoration is full. They're in their land, restored from years of desolation, and now they're living in the kingdom age. And somehow, after, you know, whatever remains of the nations, they regather and come out and march against Jerusalem and Israel. At this point, sometime between, after the 70th week, at the beginning of the 1,000 years, it could take place there. I mean, all of these are like, you know, where does it take place? Clearly in Revelation 20, at the end of, and you can read this, and we will eventually, at the end of the 1,000 years, Gog and Magog are gathered together. Satan's bound up for this 1,000 years, and there's a 1,000-year kingdom. If it's a literal 1,000 years, I like that. But again, you can keep that in mind. How long is that? But for the millennium, Satan is locked up, bound, but he is released at the end of the 1,000 years, and immediately goes off and deceives the nations and gathers Gog to come march against Jerusalem, and they're consumed. Fire comes out. They surround Jerusalem, and fire falls out of heaven, consumes them, and that's the end of Gog. Now, that whole thing, I mean, why is Satan released? Why does Gog reappear at the end of 1,000 years? Why does that take place? But that is clearly in the book of Revelation chapter 20. Is this chapter 38 the same thing as Revelation 20? That has to be a serious consideration because they're talking about a battle with Gog coming into Israel. So we now will read this and take a look at it again. I like this right here. I like this right here, that it's before, that kind of sets up the reason for the, because Israel defeats, through God, Israel defeats this invasion. And if the invader is the Antichrist, he goes somewhere else to make war and conquer other nations. And Israel has a 3.5-year peace treaty with him and worships. But at the end of the 3.5 years, that treaty is broken. So that could be it. As I read this, it's like, I don't know if I really agree with that. I'd like that to work. As I read it, it actually sounds more like Armageddon and the total destruction that takes place. And this is just another description of the final battle. And how many battles are here? I mean, as you read through Revelation, there's a series of battles. It's more, if you want to call it a war, with a number of battles taking place. It's not just one big battle on one Sunday afternoon. There's skirmishes, there's battles, there's major events, there's regrouping. All these things taking place, so somehow it might fit in there. It definitely ties in, at least the personalities or the spiritual forces ties in with Revelation 20 of another event that takes place. And then I'm wondering if I don't fully understand the interval between the end of the 70th week and the beginning of the 1,000 years, because there are some dates, even in Daniel, you know, there's days that are given here in Daniel on, you know, blessed is he who makes it to this day after the return of Christ, because there's judgments taking, there's events taking place between the end of the 70th week and the actual beginning of the millennium. There's events, there's judgments, there's cleansing of the land, there's all kinds of things taking place, and possibly this takes place there. Does anybody want to say something about that? Any? Yes, Arnold.
Any reason why the 1948 cannot be the Valley of Dry Bones?
Well, just because when you read that, it sounds more glorious than 1948. 1948 was a political event. It was, you know, I think it's setting the stage for it. And indeed, it could be. But the way that reads in chapter 38, it just sounds, I mean, it sounds like the restoration Hosea promised. It sounds like the restoration Isaiah and Jeremiah were talking about. And they weren't talking about 1948. They're talking about where the sin is removed, it's blotted out, they're restored, the fountains open, Zechariah, and they're back in, they're being obedient. If it's 1948, that would mean, if all those prophets were talking about that, or even Ezekiel, that would mean Israel's now walking in like a full open heart towards the Lord, walking in obedience. And yet, since 1948, as a nation, they're rejecting Jesus Christ. I mean, they're rejecting what we would say is the Messiah. So that I would say that's worth considering. It's a sign, especially when you consider what they understood in the Middle Ages, you know, that there's no Israel and they're trying to figure stuff out. There's not even a nation. Then now Israel's actually, when we say this, I mean, you could at least ask that question. In you know, 1848, you could even ask that question because, like, there's no Israel. But now at least you can say, could it be 1948? Well, Israel is a nation now. Huh. And so we see a, you know, history kind of circling around this. So I would say, right now, I would say no. If we're going to chronological, yes, if we're going to chronological order, right. But are we going to chronological order? And I think these chapters seem to be in chronological order. There's the restoration, there's the attack of a people that returned from peace. But if that's the case, if this is like what I want, then I'm going to have the restoration before this. But unless it's going to be circular. But I don't know if this is what I like to teach. But I don't know if that fits, because when we read this, it sounds like something, and this is just fictional of that taking place here. You don't have to have a battle before the signing of the peace treaty. I mean, I just put it in there. But if 1948, but I think we're really dumbing down chapter 38 by, or chapter 37, saying it's 1948, and I'm really being fictional when I say this is the Antichrist, because I'm trying to squeeze it in to help cause the reaction. Especially when you look at these, well, look at these countries. These countries are right here on this map, on the bottom of the first page from notes last time, Land of Magog. Now, Ma in Hebrew, M-A in Hebrew means place of, and then Gog is a leader. So Magog simply means the place of Gog, or it'd be the home of Gog. Gog is a son of Japheth, which is one of Noah's descendants. So this would be a land, and it was settled. Meshech and Tubal, it's right up in that area. That's the historical locations where those people settled. Going back, looking in Genesis 10, but also looking at other historical references, that's the people that are settling. Gomer is clearly right in that area. We're talking about Turkey or eastern Turkey and going north. Pushing up into Russia. I think it's a clear fallacy. Scholars, and when I talk about scholars, I'm talking about people that actually know things, and I read the scholars, so I don't necessarily actually know things. I'm just reading scholars. But I've even made some changes in my Bible. For example, in chapter 38, I haven't made changes in my Bible. Sorry. Sorry. I've made changes in the notes in my Bible that I've written in the 1980s. Like, oh, write that down. And then I later cross it off because other teachers, because you get in certain circles and people start, you know, especially when you're younger and someone's very excited about their eschatology and you write down all their notes only to come across actual Hebrew scholars and you know, professors that actually know what they're talking about. And they say, well, that's linguistically impossible. That's historically inaccurate. Then you realize this guy that's all fired up about, you know, his eschatology side, You have no idea what you're talking about. You're just connecting, you know, dots. And sometimes I could be that guy that's just connecting dots, and the scholars would say, absolutely not. But again, there's scholars on all camps. So just because someone rejects what you're saying doesn't mean it's wrong. You've got to kind of go with the scholars and study them. Nonetheless, I'm in chapter 38, verse 2. Son of man, set your face against Gog. That's somebody. Is it a king? Is it a demonic personality? Again, keep that in mind. Of the land of Magog, or the place of Gog. I've got in my Bible written underneath Magog, which is wrong, a wrong note, Russia. That does not mean, Magog does not mean Russia. The chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. And do you know what I have written? Because the scholar, not the scholar, but the Bible teacher back in the 80s told me this at some big mega church. Meshech and Tubal. Meshech is Moscow, and Tubal is Tobolsk, which is like not, that's the scholars universally say absolutely not. That's not even, just because it starts with the same letter, they say it's not even close. It doesn't even mean that. So those are not the reference. Although this is clearly, as you see on this map, this is, again, when you talk about the actual places, historical places, it is north, even in the text of Scripture, it's north of Israel, but far north. It's not Syria. It's far north. It's pushing up into, you know, Asia Minor or Turkey, and up into, you know, Armenia and into southern Russia. I mean, it could be the southern Russia area. But just keep that in mind, you know, as you talk. These lands right here that are mentioned, what is unique about these lands, especially when you talk about Put and Kush and all these lands here, they are, in many cases, the terrorist states today. And they would be the ones that would come out against Israel. Now, if they're the terrorist Islamic states, say, you know, in 100 years, 200 years, 2,000 years, when this ever takes place, who knows what it's going to be like when this actually takes place. But you can see the places on the map there where they're at and who's going to be attacking Israel and trying to snuff them out. Well, let's read this again with that in mind. And you can see the places there. And these places that are on this map, I'm going to say they're pretty solid. They're not my guesses. I mean, they're... Anybody that's a scholar, the word studies that have put these things together, historical references, going back into the days of the Bible, what these were referred to, these are the locations, at least they're the general areas. But anyway, say to Meshech and Tubal, and you see those are sons of Japheth, they're up there in the land of the north, under Russia, up in those states. And he says, I'm against you, O Gog, chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. I will turn you around and put hooks in your jaws. In other words, at this point, I'm going to drag you into a conflict with Israel. You've been in rebellion all this time, and now it's time for you to step into the trap and be eliminated. And they don't really have a choice right here. Now, this is not God in his sovereignty bringing judgment on somebody that is, you know, innocent. This is someone that's been in rebellion towards God, and now he says, okay, it's time. I've been holding you back. Now it's time to bring you down here and end it. Talks about all that they bring with them. Then, you know, Persia, that would be Iran, comes with them. And Kush, that's Ethiopia, like I said. And Put is Libya. All of them with shields, they're coming in weapons. And, you know, Beth Togarma is Armenia. From the far north with all its troops. Get ready, be prepared. And the key right here in verse 8, after many days, and the next line, in future years. That's a reference to, those are eschatological terms. After many days. I mean, it's not going to be in 70 years. It's not going to be, you know, in the near future. It's not going to be it's in the distant future. It's almost like saying eschatological. This is at the final events. We'll invade a land that has recovered from war. So there it has recovered from war. What war is this? Is this just like, you know, 2,000 years of being dispersed? Is this a war that's taken place during the tribulation? Is this, you know, the Roman wars? What wars? But nonetheless, there it is. I mean, I can't always say the answer, but there it is. Recovered from war. And here's whose people were gathered from many nations, not just from Babylon, but many nations, to the mountains of Israel, which had long been desolate. Again, long been desolate. It's like, what? When is that? Is that, you know, that's when they were in captivity? Is that way it's been since, you know, 70 AD? It doesn't seem desolate today. I mean, there's activity there today. They had been brought out from many nations, and now all of them live in safety. And it's hard, you know, this is something I thought about, you know, trying to put it like, is this talking about today. You go to Israel, I mean, it's safe to go there, but there's heavy security. I mean, they're in the middle of an Islamic world. They're like a little dot in this Islamic world, but now we got some peace treaties being formed over there. Are we heading towards this safety that's going to be formed? What is the safety? But they live in safety. They live in safety today. You and all your troops with many nations. Again, this is not just one nation. Many nations coming against. God says several times, just like he says he's going to bring Israel back, there's going to be a restoration that, you know, in the end. He also says he's going to gather all nations to Israel to be judged. And he says that's almost like when Israel's regathered, I'm going to bring the nations for judgment. It's almost like a promise. I mean, it's a guarantee. The nations are going to come for judgment. You and all your troops and many nations with you will go up, advancing like a storm. You'll be like a cloud covering the land. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. On that day, thoughts will come into your mind, and you'll devise an evil scheme. You will say, this has got some descriptive words in it. Gog will say, I will invade a land of unwalled villages. I will attack a peaceful and unsuspecting people. Now understand, Israel today is not an unsuspecting people. There's borders all around. I mean, if you go down the Jordan Valley, the Rift Valley, and you look across to the Jordan River, they're going to have a fence, a security fence, a high security fence. There's lights. Then there's going to be sand that is raked. Rake sand, like, you know, I don't know how many feet, if it's 25 feet, 30 feet of rake sand in between fences so that they can patrol and they can just by going down, they can see if anybody's walked or crawled over the fence. If they missed it with their security cameras, their security network missed it, we can see tracks or footprints. It's perfectly gardened, if you would, sand or dirt that's gardened just smooth so that every day you just drive down the road and just check to see, has anybody come across? It's like, doesn't look like it unless they floated. And so they're suspecting of invasion all the time. So again, keep that in mind, an unsuspecting people. That would fit this right here. The Lord has returned. They're in the land. They're unsuspecting. That would fit. Does it fit here? That verse doesn't fit here. Now, again, I want it to. I want to play with my time chart here and put it right here. But unless something's going to happen where they become unsuspecting. Maybe they make a peace treaty with the Antichrist. Now they're unsuspecting. But now you got the Antichrist, you know, violating, just put it at the mid-trib. Peaceful and unsuspecting people, all of them living without walls and without gates and bars. I will plunder and loot and turn my hand against the resettled ruins. This is what Gog is saying. I'll turn my hand against the resettled ruins and the people gathered from the nations. So this, again, these are the people gathered from the nations, which screams to me, this is the final restoration. People being brought from the nations as God has promised. Again, if that's the case, this should keep working and you know, making sense. As I'm reading this, this is falling apart for me. This is being built for me in my mind right now. I've had spent years here, the pre-trib, as far as this Gog, or at least suggesting it. Now it's seeming more like it's after this restoration of chapter 37, which is the chapter right before this. Sheba and Dedan, that'd be Yemen and South Edom. You can see it on there. They're towards the south of Sheba and Dedan down there in Cush. And the merchants of Tarshish, and Tarshish, that is, you know, I've got that drawn there on Spain. Tarshish means a coastal city. And then we went through Jonah. There's like, you know, maybe 8 or 12 different Tarshishes that are mapped out. There's a Tarshish in Spain, but there's several of them all the way going across the Mediterranean. It's like a city being called Portland. What is the name of your city? We're a port city. We are a port on the coast, so we call ourselves Portland. Well, how many Portlands are there? Well, you think of one, but there might be 50 Portlands. It's like there's many. So Tarshish is not necessarily just one city. It means a coastal city, a city, a seaport city. So anyway, Sheba, Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish and all of her villages will say to you, have you come to plunder? So there's going to be rebuke by Sheba and Dedan, and it appears the western lands, the traveler, the traders coming from the west saying, wait, Gog, What you're doing, you're coming to plunder. This is not your right to come in here. You're seen as a plunder. So you got nations to the south and to the west being critical of Gog, saying, we know what you're doing. And again, this is not like fake media. This would be, they're actually, you know, this is actually what the deal is. We'll say, have you come to plunder? Have you gathered your hordes to loot, to carry off silver and gold, to take away livestock and goods, and to seize much plunder? They say, we're coming down with whatever they've got here, wherever you're at in history, we're coming into Israel to take what they've got. Israel now has something that the northern nations want. Therefore, son of man, prophesy, say to Gog, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Now, this is the decree that Ezekiel's supposed to proclaim back in 580 against this event that is yet future, I believe, even in our day. This is what the sovereign Lord says. In that day, when my people Israel are living in safety, will you not take notice of it? You will come from your place in the far north, you and many nations with you, all of them riding on horses, a great horde, a mighty army. You will advance against my people Israel like a cloud that covers the land. In days to come, O Gog, I will bring you against my land, so that the nations may know me when I show myself holy through you before their eyes. So in other words, there's nations. You can see Sheba and Dedan to the south. The villages and the traders from Tarshish are watching, and they've seen the Lord restore Israel, and Israel's living in peace. And they're saying, oh, wow, this looks like the Lord is doing something. Now, keep this in mind. When we think about the Lord returning and setting up Israel and going into his, you know, setting up his kingdom, we think of, and again, keep this balance, that everyone just goes, ooh, ah, I guess that's the Lord. Here it is. But if it's going to proceed like a, remember when the sign of the Son of Man appears, they end up hiding from him and then trying to lead a rebellion against him. It's not like, oh, well, we were wrong. It's like they're just like Pharaoh saw the signs, his heart remained hard and got harder. And so when the sign of the Son of Man appears, Israel's going to recognize it, but the nations are going to regroup and come against it for a period of time. Maybe for several months, they're going to come against him. And so now, if the Lord comes back and he's won some battles, he's in Israel, and the western and the southern nations are looking, going, wow. Remember, all the nations are going to stream to Jerusalem for knowledge. But these kingdoms to the north are like, yeah, we're not going to go with this. This is just a moment in history. If we can somehow overcome this, and they may actually be thinking, and they will. They will think that at the end of the millennium. In Revelation 20, Satan goes off and deceives the nations again. And the first thing they do is say, let's attack Jerusalem and get rid of this king. Now, it's ridiculous. You think, it's ridiculous. Why would you think that after 1,000 years or this millennial kingdom that you could revolt? Well, Satan deceives them and they actually try it at the end. Are they trying it here now at the beginning? Israel's been restored from the nations. They're in a peaceful land. The West is watching. The South is watching. They're getting ready to come and start learning the ways of the Lord and fill the whole earth with his knowledge. But the kings of the North, Gog, says, no, not on my watch. I've been fighting this for years. We're going to attack this and take this and make this kingdom that they think is theirs and turn this glorious millennial kingdom into our kingdom. Is that what they're thinking? I mean, it appears that way. Meaning they've had a chance. They've had a chance to come in line. What I'm saying would be this. When the Lord returns and sets up his kingdom, it's not necessarily this big, just this line drawn. Here's the kingdom, and these are casting out of darkness. They even have periods of judgment where the sheep and the goat, they separate them. Is this part of that separation? Meaning you've had a chance to come, but you're actually going to, instead of coming and repenting, instead of coming and paying tribute, you're going to try to come and take the king. You're kidding. You're going to try to take the kingdom. He says, and I know your hearts haven't changed. It's like Pharaoh's heart hasn't changed, so I'm going to harden your heart and bring you down, and I'll destroy you. And all these kin from the west and the south are watching. What are we going to do? Well, why don't you guys come down and attack, and I'll show them. And you're laid waste, and all the nations go like, ooh, all right, I think he is serious. I think this is the king. Does that make sense? Meaning, when you look at it historically, when you look at it in a Sunday school way, boom, the flash of light, there's Jesus, and everybody's saved, or everybody converts or is saved. But if it's a historical event, the new king comes, some strange things happen in the atmosphere. Now he's in Jerusalem, and now you got nations on the fringes saying, what are we going to do? Could this be them? Well, I mean, here it is. He says in verse 16, you'll advance against my people Israel like a cloud that covers the land. In days to come, O Gog, I will bring you against my land so that the nations may know me when I show myself holy through you before their eyes. The nations need a demon. I need a Pharaoh to beat up. Would you come down here, please? And then I destroy you on the mountains. It's like, there. Does anybody have any questions? It's like, whoa. They're now convinced. They just saw Gog get annihilated. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Are you not the one I spoke of in former days by my servants, the prophets of Israel? At that time, they prophesied for years that I would bring you against them. Meaning, the prophets are saying, the king of the north is coming. The king of the north is coming. He says, they've been saying this for years, and I've never allowed it to happen. It's now going to happen. This is what will happen in that day when Gog attacks the land of Israel. My hot anger will be aroused, declares the sovereign Lord. In my zeal and fiery wrath, I declare that at that time there shall be a great earthquake in the land of Israel. The fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the beasts of the fields, every creature that moves along the ground, and all the people of the face of the earth will tremble at my presence. Now when you start hearing this, earthquake, his presence, are we going back to here? You see, now consider this. The sign of the Son of Man appears somewhere here, and the nations mourn, you know, right after the halfway point. Are we talking about here? And the nations are going to see the judgment. Is he talking about the wrath being poured out? So are we talking pre-trib? Are we talking somewhere in the middle time? Are we talking here, right? Is it Armageddon? Or is it after Armageddon, after the land has been established and the people are living in the land peacefully? You understand, I'm presenting all of these because one of them's right, or is it distant future? Nonetheless, great earthquake, everybody's trembling in my presence. The mountains will be overturned, the cliffs will crumble, and every wall will fall to the ground. I will summon a sword against Gog on all my mountains, declares the sovereign Lord. Every man's sword will be against his brother. In other words, Gog's armies, they're all the nations, and they're going to start turning on each other, trying to figure out what's going on. They're going to be confused. Just like you see in Old Testament accounts of battles, there's confusion in the ranks, and they end up fighting each other, especially in a mixed army, a mixed military, where you got nations coming together. They're not sure who's on whose side, and they all just slaughter each other. We saw that multiple times, or at least several times in the Old Testament. Something like that seems like it's going to happen. Every man's sword will be against his brother. I will execute judgment upon him with the plague and bloodshed, so some kind of a plague. I will pour down torrents of rain and hailstones and burning sulfur on him, on his troops, and on every nation and all the nations with him. And so I will show my greatness and my holiness, and I will make myself known in the sight of many nations. Once again, it's a display. Israel already knows him. Israel already knows they're in the land peacefully living with him. The nations are on the outside watching, so he brings in Gog so the other nations can make a decision. There, you see, this is me in Israel. Okay, this is me in Gog. That's what happens to Gog. Now do you have enough information? And those who live in safety, okay, you will fall in the open field. Let me go back and read this. Your troops and all the nations with you. I will give you as food to all kinds of carrion birds and to wild animals. You will fall on in the open field, for I have spoken, declares the sovereign Lord. I will send fire on Magog and on those who live in safety in the coastlands, and they will know that I am the Lord. In other words, there's going to be fire. Did I jump ahead? Where was I at? Okay, yeah, so I jumped ahead. Okay, and they will know that I am the Lord. Okay, so we're just beginning chapter 39, right? Because I started way over here. Okay, so we're in chapter 39. Continuing, the Son of Man prophesy against Gog and say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I am against you, O Gog, chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. I will turn you around and drag you along. I will bring you from the far north and send you against the mountains of Israel. Then I will strike your bow from your left hand and make your arrows drop from your right hand. On the mountains of Israel you will fall. you and all your troops and the nations with you. I will give them you as food to all kinds of carrion birds and scavenger birds and to the wild animals. So in other words, they've got just dead bodies scattered all over Israel. You will fall in the open field, for I have spoken, declares the sovereign Lord. I'll send fire on Magog and on all those who live in the safety of the coastlands, and they'll know that I am the Lord. In other words, it appears they're going to die, but back on their homelands or something, there's going to be fire breakout. How that happens, you know, some people say if Israel's retaliating with some kind of nuclear weapons, that they'd be all, if that's happening to them, they're, you know, it's you know, what they call it, Samson, the Samson initiative. You know, when they die, they're all going to die. I don't know if that's what that's, but anyway, something happens back in their homelands. I will make known my holy name among my people Israel. I'll no longer let my holy name be profaned, and the nations will know that I, the Lord, am the Holy One in Israel. It is coming. It will surely take place, declares the sovereign Lord. This is the day I have spoken of. Then those who live in the towns of Israel will go out. Now, here's what happens. Now, the battle's done, and now this is the cleanup. This is why you look at this as being a literal event. Then those who live in the towns of Israel will go out and use the weapons for fuel and burn them up, the small and large shields, the bows and arrows, the war clubs and spears. For 7 years they will use them for fuel. See, now when you hear that 7 years, but they're going to gather the Gog, all of Gog's nations fell, but they leave all their weapons there on the mountains of Israel. So they just go out and roll all these weapons and, you know, demilitarize them and turn them, you know, like they said, turn the weapons into farming equipment. Here they turn the weapons into fuel. And that's where you get for 7 years. Well, I've used this before. That's a 7-year period. So that's why it takes place here, because they're going to use it for 7 years for fuel. Again, that's not a slam dunk, but I've always made that connection. If it's over here or wherever, they're going to use those weapons for fuel for 7 years. There's going to be 7 years worth of fuel in those weapons. Are they nuclear weapons? They're going to be reversed or something? I'm not sure if that's even possible. 7 years, verse 10, they will not need to gather wood from the fields or cut it from the forest, because they will use the weapons for fuel, if you didn't understand it the first time. And they will plunder those who plundered them and loot those who looted them, declares the sovereign Lord. On that day, I will give Gog a burial place in Israel in the valley of those who travel east towards the sea. Okay, here's what happens. There are so many dead bodies. It's going to take months to clean Israel up after this. And that falls in good with that time period after the return of Christ and the beginning of the millennium. There's just cleanup time. There's a period of judgment, a time of evaluation. It just can't happen if it's historical, if it's in real time, it's in the real physical universe. It just can't happen in an afternoon. Jesus can't come back at noon to have the battles in the, you know, later on by 5 o'clock. We're having a picnic in the Kidron Valley and it's all, we're in the kingdom. It's got to take a period of time to clean things up, especially if you read the tribulation. I mean, the world is dying at the end of the tribulation. But what this is now, here's the Dead Sea, the Jordan River, up here's Galilee. Here's the, we always got to draw Megiddo, the Valley of Armageddon right in here, or the Megiddo Valley. Jerusalem would be here. The mountains of Israel, they rise up through here. There's a ridge of mountains running right through here. So this would be called the mountains of Israel coming right up through. Here's the coastal plain. It's flat, flat, flat. Then you start ascending into the mountain ridge coming right down the middle. Then you decline again going down to the Rift Valley or the Jordan Valley. What they're talking about right here is a place right over here. That's where they're going to bury everybody. That's this place right here. It says, verse 11, on that day, I will give Gog a burial place in Israel in the valley of those who travel east towards the sea. It will block the way of travelers, because Gog and all his hordes will be buried there. So it will be called the Valley of Hamon Gog. Or this is going to be called, where they're going to be buried here, it's going to be called the Valley of the Multitude of Gog. And this is going to be like a national cemetery or burial pit of all these bodies that are going to be drugged. They died in the mountains, and Israel's now defiled with all the dead bodies. They're going to have to gather them and bring them down there and bury them. Verse 12, for 7 months the house of Israel will be burying them in order to cleanse the land. So again, that goes with that idea. Whenever this takes place, they're not just going to, you know, good, the armies are all dead. Yeah, they're all dead. Now you got 7 months of dead bodies to pick up. You know, everybody's on garbage duty. Or, you know, funeral duty. All the people of the land will bury them. In other words, full-time, ready, get to work. And the day I am glorified will be a memorial day for them, declares the Sovereign Lord. Men will be regularly employed to cleanse the land. Meaning, for those seven, you're going to have government jobs of cleaning the land. Some will go throughout the land, and in addition to them, others will bury those that remain on the ground. At the end of the 7 months, they will begin their search. So now they've had, you know, everybody's hired by this government or whatever, and everybody's just collecting bodies. They're just dragging bodies, shipping bodies down. They're just nonstop cargo going down here to the valley of the multitude of Gog. And then after that, well, that's it. Now you're going to bring out the special forces, and they're going to sweep the land because there's going to be, like, body parts here and things that, because things have been decaying, arms fell off the wagon or off the truck. You know, just they're just going to go through, and they're going to go through and do the detail. They just had massive cleanup. Now it's at the end of 7 months, I'm in verse 15, they will begin their search. As they go through the land and one of them sees a human bone, he'll set up a marker beside it until a grave diggers have buried it in the valley of Hamon Gog. Also, you know, that's the multitude of Gog. Also, a town called Hamanoah will be there, and so they will cleanse the land. So here, there's going to be a town breakout right here or wherever. There's going to be a town. What's that town for? Well, that's the people got to eat and sleep. I mean, they've got to go out to, you know, get supper. So there's going to be actual a town is going to form, and their job is to oversee Arlington Cemetery or, you know, Gog's burial place here. So they're going to have 7 months of cleaning and taking bodies. Then they're going to have people put markers, like if they're, you know, by that time the flesh is decaying, they're just going to have bones laying around. They put a marker up, and you just then a wagon comes by, or a semi comes by, or whatever, a hearse comes by, a garbage truck comes by. They're going to have special guys with hazmat suits or whatever picking up the bones, and then they're still going to be shipping down. Now the workforce is smaller, but it's going to be a permanent, full-time city is going to be growing right there, kind of like the gold rush. This is the bone rush. Also a town called Hamanoah will be there, and so they will cleanse the land. Son of man, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. Call out to every kind of bird and all the wild animals. We need help. You know, assemble and come together from all around to sacrifice to the sacrifice I am preparing for you, the great sacrifice on the mountains of Israel. There you will eat flesh and drink blood. Now, does this sound familiar? This sounds like the end of Revelation, where all the horse and riders and all the, they're all killed in the last battle. I mean, that matches up in the time sequence, but also the way it described. There you'll eat the flesh and drink blood. You'll eat the flesh of mighty men and drink the blood of princes and of the earth as if they were rams and lambs and goats and bulls, all of them fattened animals from Bashan. Again, that's almost not word for word, but that's the same attitude you see at the end of Revelation. At the sacrifice I am preparing for you, you'll eat fat, he's talking to the birds, fat till you are glutted and drink blood till you are drunk. At my table, you will eat your fill of horses and riders, mighty men and soldiers of every kind, declares the Sovereign Lord, talking to the scavenger birds, not talking to humans. He's talking to the scavenger birds. But that's exactly what it says at the end of Revelation. All there's going to just be, you know, eating, you know, drunk on blood and gorged with meat. I will display my glory among the nations, and all the nations will see the punishment I inflict and the hand I lay upon them. From that day forward, the house of Israel will know that I am the Lord their God. And the nations will know that the people of Israel went into exile for their sin because they were unfaithful to me. So in other words, why was Israel in dispersion for 2,000 years? Because they were disobedient to the Lord. It's like, oh, so that was true. The reason they were dispersed was because of their disobedience, and now they've been brought back. Because they were unfaithful to me. So I hid my face from them and handed them over to their enemies, and they all fell by the sword. I dealt with them according to their uncleanness and their offenses, and I hid my face from them. Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, I will now bring Jacob back from captivity and will have compassion on the people of Israel and will be zealous for my holy name. They will forget their shame and all the unfaithfulness they showed towards me when they lived in safety in their land with no one to make them afraid. When I have brought them back from the nations and have gathered them from the countries of their enemies, I will show myself holy through them in the sight of many nations. And all those nations are watching yet. Then they will know that I am the Lord their God, for though I sent them into exile among the nations, I will gather them to their own land, not leaving any behind. I will no longer hide my face from them, for I will pour out my spirit on the house of Israel. And that's the Holy Spirit. Sounds like redemption, declares the sovereign Lord. Now, chapter 40, we're going to stop, but in chapter 40, in the 25th year of our exile, that would be the year 573 BC, at the beginning of the year, on the 10th of the month, in the 14th year, after the fall of the city of Jerusalem in 586, on that very day, the hand of the Lord was upon me, and he took me there. He took me to Jerusalem. In chapter 2, or verse 2, in visions of God, he took me to the land of Israel and set me on a very high mountain on whose south side were some buildings. Now, do you see very clearly in chapter 40? Very clearly in chapter 40, he says, he's in Babylon, or in the land of Babylon. He's in by the Kibar River. He's taken in a vision by the Spirit of God and is taken back to Jerusalem. After it had fallen, he's now taken back to Jerusalem, but in a vision. Now he's seeing a vision. In this, he was, talking about a historical event that's going to take place. Now he's taken back to Jerusalem, and now he's going to be shown the city on a very high mountain. And this city is the city of Jerusalem. It's fully inhabited, and now he's going to start talking about the city that's going to be the city that's where the Lord is going to dwell. And from here to the end of the book now, you've got about 8 chapters of him talking about, maybe 9 chapters, of him talking about this city, this land, and what's going on, the river that's flowing through it. He's talking about the millennial kingdom. So it's hard for me not to have this in a sequential sequence where you've got the restoration of Israel, you've got the battle of Gog, which seems to be after the restoration, with the Lord is now somehow present, and then after the battle of Gog, they get everything cleaned up, and then the nations see there's some kind of setting up of the kingdom, and then we describe all the details of that kingdom for about 8 or 9 chapters right here. You do not have to agree with that, but we do have to understand those verses. I think we've got historical events taking place, but also we're seeing things that are taking place in the future. Any other comments or questions? We'll pick up with chapter 40. The highlight is going to come, if you just want to look at it. I've got this in my Bible. See right there, you probably have that if you've got a good Bible. That's what he's going to see the temple. There's the measurements of the temple. Great details of the temple there. But in chapter 43, chapter 43, Then the man, that's the angel who's with him, brought me to the gate facing east, and I saw the glory of God of Israel coming from the east. He's going to see the Lord re-enter the temple from the east. Remember, he saw him in chapter 11, saw the Lord leave the temple and go to Babylon. He's now going to see him come back to the temple after, several thousand years. So that's where we're heading, and we'll do that next. I'll pray. If you have any questions or thoughts, then please feel free to share them. Father, we do thank you again for this chance. We thank you for the opportunity to hear your word. We ask that we may understand, that we may take it to heart, that we ourselves would adjust our lives and our thinking to be in tune with your word, that we would honor you in our things we say, the things we do. And Father, we do ask again that we be able to share the good news with the world, that we be able to share the hope that we have in the God of glory who is returning, who's working history to his purpose. And we ask that we may be part of your kingdom in the future. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Hey, thank you for your time.